Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Anna Sales, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Now we're going to take a moment and listen and pay attention to what's happening in our brains while we're listening. Seth Horowitz is joining us. He's a neuroscientist and researcher at Brown who's studied hearing and listening for 30 years. And he's also a musician who's had feedback from an amp cause him to throw up. And he's caused people in his audience to fall out of their seats with trick compositions. He's here to explain how all of that happens. He's got a great new book called The Universal Sense, How Hearing Shapes the Mind. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Anna. Good morning.
First, so this book is sweeping in its scope. It covers everything, as you write, about how the presence of sound drives the evolution, development, and day-to-day function of the mind. So first, listeners, if you have any questions about how your ears work, whether fish hear things underwater, what you should listen to prep for a job interview, now's your chance. Think about listening, hearing, your ears, what you want to know. The phone number to call is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. To start, Seth Horowitz, I want to ask you about so-called Brown sound. You write about it when you're talking about that moment when your amp made a strange sound as you were practicing and all of a sudden you were throwing up.
Technically, the Brown sound. The Brown sound is supposed to be something that's an infrasonic sound or a very low pitch sound that's supposed to release bowel control in a very unpleasant manner. It's not. It's largely been shown to be, if not an urban legend, then extremely unlikely. Although infrasound, very low frequencies, well below what you can hear, definitely have an effect on you. They can make you nauseous. Long-term exposure to it, or even shorter-term exposure to it, can have very unpleasant physiological effects that I found out the hard way, which I still blame on my cat.
So describe the mechanism for that. Why, listening to a certain frequency, why does that make you nauseous?
It's not so much listening to it. Remember that sound is more than, it's about vibration of matter. And it's more than what we can hear. We humans hear when they're young from about 20 cycles per second, very, very low pitch, to about 20,000 cycles per second, which is so high that as an adult, most people can't hear it, but little kids can hear it. But there are sounds way above and way below that, and extremely low frequency sounds actually can vibrate your body. And if you think about your body, you're basically a big wet sack held together, you know, bounded by stiff, rigid members. And if you have a very high power, low-frequency signal coming at you, it can basically vibrate your body. And if it vibrates your abdomen up and torso, like what happened with me was I was playing with a very large amplifier and playing with very low-frequency oscillators, and it wasn't supposed to make that sound at all. And when I turned back towards the speaker and was trying to figure out what that sound, horrible sound was, it was vibrating my body, and I just got incredibly nauseous. And the moment just sticks with me. It's not the kind of sound you're going to run into every day, but its relatives do surround us. Jackhammers put out infrasonic sound as well as a lot of other frequencies, and people who do a lot of construction work can be subject to what's called vibroacoustic disease.
Huh. And technically then it's motion sickness caused by sounds.
No, motion sickness is usually carried out by the other part of your ears, your balance center, your vestibular center. It's a body motion. It's a vibratory problem. It's not an auditory problem. Vibration and sound goes far beyond what we hear. And sometimes just you're not aware of what effect it's really having on you.
So who knows about the ways we can manipulate people with sound? Your book talks about brain hacking and different ways you can manipulate sound to influence the reaction and behavior of others. It's people are looking at using sound as a weapon?
Well, you have to differentiate between using sound as a tool and using sound as a weapon. Using sound as a weapon has been going on since we invented music. Music is about emotional communication. Hmm. And aside from just going and listening to a concert, it's been widely used in advertising. It's about grabbing your attention and inducing an emotional state. It's very few ads will ever want you to hate their product. So they try to come up with something that will either make you form an association with it, so you remember it, have a jingle, associate sound with words, and you have a handle on locking things into your memory, and then make the jingle pleasant or something, and you'll hopefully like that sound until it's been repeated 100 times. On the other hand, sound can be abused and used as a weapon. We have very deep things in our brainstem, the very lower part of our brain, that's just getting sensory information in that responds to basic elements of sound. Very loud sounds, very deep and loud sounds mean something very big nearby. Most acoustic weapons are largely hype, but there are things like the LRAD, which is not using anything particularly futuristic. It's not using ultrasound to make your head explode or infrasound to make you throw up. What it is pumping an awful lot of acoustic energy right into where we're most sensitive. And you think about it, you hear a loud sound or a piercing sound, one of the first things you do is you cover your ears, you hunch down, you try to protect yourself. So an acoustic weapon can just be something that's taking something that you hear very well and overblowing it.
So you hunch down to protect yourself. Well, one other thing I want to ask you about, when it comes to music, I mean, you say marketers have been using music to induce a certain emotion for years and years, but, you know, we've heard about the Mozart effect, and we've heard about people looking to music to try to manipulate themselves. So just for a moment, let's take a listen to Mozart's Sonata for Two Pianos in D Major. Okay, Seth Horowitz, while we listen, what's happening in our brains right now? Is it making us smarter, or would any music at all do that?
There are definitely effects on performance, listening to music. The term Mozart effect has been picked up and blown out of proportion, because it's not just Mozart. Mozart was a brilliant musician who created music that was well within not only our hearing range, which all music really is by definition, but also was very, very spatially specific. We have a very tight tie-in between space and music. We think of pitches high or low. If you've ever played an instrument, high goes to the right, low goes to the left if you're a keyboardist, or up and down if you play saxophone. The original Mozart effect looked at a modest change and an increase in the ability of spatial reasoning, which is a part of intelligence. It got overblown. This is not to say, though, that music does not have a profound effect on our attention, on our wellness, on our emotional state. It's just that the term itself got turned into a marketing phrase. There have been quite a few studies using related pieces of music or Mozart's music that have shown decreases in markers for stress levels. Serum cortisol is one of them. There are others that have shown that you can have increased memory retention if you memorize to music and get to play the music back while you have to recall it. Music is just, it permeates so much of the human brain that it can have very, very complex effects.
You said spatial reasoning from hearing the high and low. What does that mean?
Spatial reasoning, there are a lot of different elements to what we call intelligence. We don't really have a good definition of intelligence, but spatial reasoning is the ability to understand how things work in three-dimensional space. If you ever have seen some of those online or other intelligence tests where they show you a cube and say, okay, if we rotated it, what does it look like now? That's spatial reasoning. Being able to read a map is spatial reasoning. Music, because it activates a lot of pathways that are involved in spatial reasoning and spatial perception, can have a definite effect on your abilities, especially if you perform an instrument.
And speaking of spatial reasoning, this just brings us, we're running out of time, but I want to take a listen to one more sound, another sound that has to do with spatial reasoning. These are, of course, bats. So is that the same thing, are you saying? Music and then how bats use sound to kind of understand three-dimensional space, the same things happening in bats' brains and our brains?
We have relatively similar basic mechanisms for handling sound, but bats are using it as a basic perceptual tool. They're actually substituting auditory echoes for what we would do with vision. So they know the sound they make. They get an echo back. Their brain has a template for the for what the original was, and they compare the two. The differences become a perceptual world for them.
We hear one more sound. It means it's the end of the hour, so we're out of time, Seth Horowitz. Thank you so much. The Universal Sense, How Hearing Shapes the Mind, is his great new book. This is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Anna Sale, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, coming up 30 issues in 30 days, K-12 education.